I-CEO. As he was finishing work on the Think Different ad, Jobs did some different thinking of his own. He decided that he would officially take over running the company, at least on a temporary basis. He had been the de facto leader since Emilio's ouster 10 weeks earlier, but only as an advisor. Fred Anderson had the titular role of interim CEO. On September 16, 1997, Jobs announced that he would take over that title, which inevitably got abbreviated as I-CEO. His commitment was tentative. He took no salary and signed no contract. But he was not tentative in his actions. He was in charge, and he did not rule by consensus. That week, he gathered his top managers and staff in the Apple Auditorium for a rally, followed by a picnic featuring beer and vegan food, to celebrate his new role and the company's new ads. He was wearing shorts, was walking around the campus barefoot, and had a stubble of beard. "I've been back about 10 weeks, working really hard," he said, looking tired but deeply determined. "What we're trying to do is not highfalutin. We're trying to get back to the basics of great products, great marketing, and great distribution. Apple has drifted away from doing the basics really well." For a few more weeks, Jobs and the board kept looking for a permanent CEO. Various names surfaced: George M.C. Fisher of Kodak, Sam Palmisano at IBM, Ed Zander at Sun Microsystems, but most of the candidates were understandably reluctant to consider becoming CEO if Jobs was going to remain an active board member. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that Zander declined to be considered because he didn't want Steve looking over his shoulder, second-guessing him on every decision. At one point, Jobs and Ellison pulled a prank on a clueless computer consultant who was campaigning for the job. They sent him an email saying that he had been selected, which caused both amusement and embarrassment when stories appeared in the papers that they were just toying with him. By December, it had become clear that Jobs's I-CEO status had evolved from interim to indefinite. As Jobs continued to run the company, the board quietly deactivated its search. "I went back to Apple and tried to hire a CEO, with the help of a recruiting agency, for almost 4 months," he recalled. "But they didn't produce the right people. That's why I finally stayed. Apple was in no shape to attract anybody good." The problem Jobs faced was that running two companies was brutal. Looking back on it, he traced his health problems back to those days. "It was rough, really rough, the worst time in my life. I had a young family, I had Pixar, I would go to work at 7 a.m. and I'd get back at 9 at night, and the kids would be in bed. And I couldn't speak, I literally couldn't, I was so exhausted. I couldn't speak to Laureen, all I could do was watch a half hour of TV and vegetate. It got close to killing me. I was driving up to Pixar and down to Apple in a black Porsche convertible, and I started to get kidney stones. I would rush to the hospital, and the hospital would give me a shot of Demerol in the butt, and eventually I would pass it." Despite the grueling schedule, the more that Jobs immersed himself in Apple, the more he realized that he would not be able to walk away. When Michael Dell was asked at a computer trade show in October 1997 what he would do if he were Steve Jobs and taking over Apple, he replied, "I'd shut it down and give the money back to the shareholders." Jobs fired off an email to Dell. "CEOs are supposed to have class," it said. "I can see that isn't an opinion you hold." Jobs liked to stoke up rivalries as a way to rally his team. He had done so with IBM and Microsoft, and he did so with Dell. When he called together his managers to institute a build-to-order system for manufacturing and distribution, Jobs used as a backdrop a blown-up picture of Michael Dell with a target on his face. "We're coming after you, buddy," he said to cheers from his troops. One of his motivating passions was to build a lasting company. At age 12, when he got a summer job at Hewlett-Packard, he learned that a properly run company could spawn innovation far more than any single creative individual. I discovered that the best innovation is sometimes the company, the way you organize a company, he recalled. The whole notion of how you build a company is fascinating. When I got the chance to come back to Apple, I realized that I would be useless without the company, and that's why I decided to stay and rebuild it.